What happened?
Blog Talk Radio.
This is Insights for the Soul, a foundation for insight production, assisting mind, body, and spirit to guide you to have balance using your body's natural ability to heal. Live fully, heal thoroughly.
Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. If you're listening to this now live, welcome. And if you're listening through the archives, we welcome you as well. And today's guest is truly phenomenal. And that this is just my perspective. And it's important for me as far as being a woman, as far as being a leader in the community, and as well as looking at someone who has taken the concepts of what she offers in her workshop, taking it to the through the steps that is necessary for one to empower oneself. And I have a quote that I want to read because this is so important. It's like, respect yourself enough to walk away from anything that no longer serves you, grows you, or makes you happy. And I don't know who the author of that is, but when I saw that, I was like, what a perfect quote for our guest who will be sharing about her book and her book that we'll discuss a little further and a little bit more specific things, and that all the book, because you'll have to go to her website and purchase her book. And why I say that is because, like I said, empowerment. What does that really mean for everybody? Because I know for me, and in empowerment, when I had to deal with that, there was still fear behind it. And yet, did I take those steps to jump off the cliff and say, I surrender to whatever that I need to do to accomplish my goal? There was many ways that I had to look at myself when dealing with empowerment. And when we look at men versus women, we're not talking about a competition of who is better or who has the altitude. I look at it as in a structured environment. And we're talking about government entities. I used to work for the Las Vegas Metro Police Department. So I'm saying this with respect that in their environment, it was a man's world. And in that world, I knew where my position of stature or a way of being within a man's world. And so when I said that quote, respect yourself, it's a way for me to have looked back at myself of where I was and to really resonate with that, respect myself. And not that I was in competition with any of them. I totally respected a lot of them, and there were a lot of them were my friends, and I would never want anything to happen to them. And I got a lot of friends still there, except some of them are retiring now. And what I found is that when I was working there, I did not walk away at first until I did get empowered, because it was not serving me. And I was not growing, and I was not in a place that I was happy. I did not feel as if I could grow or be myself, or where there was a lot of disrespect as far as me being a woman. And there was not a lot of people who would consider me as a leader. There is one that I know that was, and that's what got me on to my journey. So as we bring our guests, and Gina, you're going to have to forgive me because I don't know how to say your middle, Gelbach Hall. Gina, I apologize. Hall is how I know her. So let's bring her on because she has been she's a retired battalion chief completing 25 years in the fire and emergency services. And she, with that knowledge and wisdom, she's moving on to her next chapter, which is an author, international speaker, and a life coach, and which she is one of the leaders. I feel that she is one of the leaders of this next generation, this next wave that's coming through. And so without any further ado, let's go ahead and bring on Gina. Gina, you're there.
Yes, I'm here. Hello, and thank you for that nice introduction.
You're welcome.
Oh, so sweet. Yes, I'm so excited to be here.
Yes, it's important for the women out there as well as the men to understand that this is not about any prejudice. This is about our own self-respect and the leadership within ourselves as well as empowerment, correct?
That is totally correct. I mean, a lot of people might see this as a story about the fire department, and it was for me. That was my journey. But really, I think the book's appeal is that everybody in one shape or form has had a similar journey, and I'm just articulating it through my experience. But it definitely is a path that many, many people take, male and female alike. So I think it's applicable along a great spectrum of experiences.
And so when you said from your perspective, it was from the fire department point of view, because that's where you worked. And I understand that a little bit of the history that you were and how your journey began when you were challenged to look at how unhappy you were at work.
Yes. I mean, it was a multifaceted challenge. I mean, there was a challenge of being one of the first women on the fire department. It was a challenge of filing a lawsuit and fighting for equal rights. And then there was also probably the greatest challenge was finding myself. And in the book's a combination of all three of those struggles. And so people ask me what the book's about sometimes, and I have a hard time telling people what it is because it really is all those three journeys kind of put into one format.
Wow. And what's wonderful about that is that you have given some not only perspectives, and you also gave where you were, what you were going through, and really escalating into how you took back your power.
Yes. And you know, it's funny, I spent a good part of my career trying to be accepted instead of respected. And there was a turning point probably at the time I did file for discrimination that I started doing more empowerment and respect versus victim and acceptance. And so that, like I said, it was a journey. You know, it'd be nice if we all just woke up one day and became empowered, but it's really a journey. And it is sometimes a struggle, and mostly with myself. And that's what the book is about, kind of describing my journey through that.
And what I like is you also had said that you had to be the driver in the seat in the relationship that you had with yourself as well as with the fire department, on realizing that you were the common denominator, and so you made some choices from that, right?
That's right. I think the hardest part of any journey and to empowerment and to awareness is really getting at a very fundamental, like, you level that you are the only common denominator in your life. And if you don't like how things are going, then it's not up to anybody else or any situation. It's really up to you. And as my mentor would say, take those fingers that are pointing at others and turn around and point them at you, because the correction always goes with you. And so I had, through a series of events, that I really had to, I was brought to my knees, really, emotionally. And I was really at a deciding point at one time whether I was going to basically fold, and I cringed to think where my life would have gone had I made that choice, versus a choice to really get that I had to do some fundamental changes in myself to change the situation I was in. And that was very difficult at the time, because I really could have easily been a victim to all of it. And yet, I think in that moment that I was on my knees, you know, just really torn down, I had this moment of, like, I can never say the word epiphany, you know, of, like, I have to do something here, or I will die from this, you know, I mean, literally in some way. So that was kind of the biggest turning point in my life, to changing around. Now, that journey is still ongoing today. That was back in 1996, so it's definitely a journey.
I like that. I know that some people out there who, you know, some of our listeners and those who are brand new and, you know, on their journey already, and I know that sounds like a journey is a cliche, but the truth is that when we all take that path, it is a journey. Some of us go, you know, right and left, and some of us are right on with our path. But some of the things that you discuss in the book, it to me, it reminds me of the times that the military had to go through this process.
And I think still is going through. I mean, I do think there's a pendulum swing anytime you try on a different hat, so to speak. You almost really go too far one way, and then, or, you know, you've been too far one side, now you're too far the other side in a correction. And somewhere after time, you settle into that middle, you know, weighted area in the middle. And so, you know, I had that swing way on the negative. I swung way, it took a while for me to settle down, is what I'm saying. It wasn't like a clear path, I'm on it and I'm doing it. It really was a pendulum swing at times that, you know, I had to adjust and rethink what I was doing, put corrections in place, really see again, you know, constantly looking at where my story was tripping me up and getting back on that path. So, you know, I think that's what I call the journey, because it really, you know, I say in my book, you know, people that go first on this, it's a, you know, like the pioneers when they were coming west, they didn't get this nice, you know, I-14 or I-15, you know, beltway to go across it. They had nothing. They had to get out there with a machete and cut down stuff. And really, your journey is sometimes the machete, you know, clearing out the landscape in front of you. And the people behind you go, oh, I don't know why you thought this was so hard. Look at this great highway I'm on. it's a lot of work. Well, but it's worth it. I want to say that. It's very worth it.
don't you feel at times, you know, as you're going through your journey and still going through your journey, that, you know, when you reflect back, that there was a purpose in all this, experience that you had to learn?
I talk about my book, I call it the silver lining. I think in everything we do, there's a silver lining. And I mean, I mentioned things from back when I was in second grade that ended up having a big silver lining for me, from an early marriage when I was very young. I ended up with a silver lining. I mean, there are a whole bunch of things in my life that at the time, no, I didn't realize what the significance of me not getting what I wanted until much later. But that actually ended up being like the biggest blessing I could have had. I love Garth Brooks' song, you know, thank God for unanswered prayers. You know, I think sometimes the silver lining is, I know the silver lining is there. To me, that's my faith, you know, that the silver lining is there. And it got me through some really dark times in fighting a lawsuit and having to go through the process of recovery. Do that, and I think the silver lining for me, I mean, one of the big things is probably having a book coming out in 2 weeks. I mean, that to me is, you know, really a silver lining for me.
Yes. And especially when you had to go through so many changes in the middle of getting on the fire department, right? Mm-hmm. And then all of the different things that you had to experience, like sharing the same sleeping quarters and having to, have the same bathroom, so forth and so on. So there was a lot of changes that you had to go through. It wasn't just, I got on the fire department and I'm a woman and everybody's got to change. There, you had to do a lot of changes in order to be part of that whole department. True?
Yeah, absolutely. When I first came on, there was four of us women that came on out of the class of 25. We all came on at the same time in 1987. In 1982, they hired their first woman firefighter, and she had been on, obviously, for 5 years. And so although we weren't the first women, I kind of say we were the first women to really have impact on the fire department. And myself and another woman were the first two women to ever be on A Platoon. We were in a lot of ways the first big impact of women into the fire service. And I like to equate a lot of my problems is inherited, not created. I didn't create the bathrooms. They were already there when we got there. I didn't create the turnout in their system of ordering when I got there. I inherited that system. So, yes, a lot of the changes were basically because all four of us coming on were, we were really cocky or something because we came on, we had an opinion. It started the first day of rookie school. All the women, except for me, had long hair, down past the middle of their back. And the guys came up to them and said, you're going to have to get the hair off your color. You're going to have to cut your hair. And they said, oh, I don't think so. They ended up putting it up the whole time. But, it was right off. The guys were like, oh, what do we do with these foreign species that landed on our planet, and so it was a learning curve for both the fire department and for us. And, it really was us do a lot of educating. I wish I knew I'd had that framework when I came on instead of fighting for it. I was educating them. It would have helped me a lot if I'd had that mind frame when I came on. Mm-hmm. But I didn't, and after a while, it did really feel like a fight. You're always fighting for something, mm-hmm. And I'd say begging and pleading for something, get it, and then ridiculed and beat down because you got it. So it was like you couldn't ever get off the beat-up train. It was like, come on, give me a break. And because our numbers were so low, at the time there was 5 of us out of 400, our numbers were so low that there really wasn't a collective voice. And they never had us women work together, or if we did, it was almost an accident at the first few years. Mm-hmm. And so we really were isolated and trying to just do the best we could in the situation we were given.
Yeah, it's one of those things that people would say, well, why would you say that when, you're working for the fire department? Why would you even say anything? And what they're not realizing is that it's the infrastructures that you are dealing with, and it's not against the fire department that you're speaking up. Even though, there's a lawsuit and there's a little bit more that you have to go and really read it to get more clarity, because it is a really good book of the perspective. But there was some discrimination. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. It started practically day one.
Yes.
But
it escalated.
Yeah, it escalated. Part of it, as I look back, was probably some of my fault in the sense that I didn't address it appropriately at the beginning because I didn't know where my boundaries were.
Mm-hmm.
I lost my track of thought. But, yes, it really did start at the beginning, and it kind of continued through my whole career, and in different varying modes. It definitely was a process.
Well, the process also gets interesting. And hear me, everyone out there. I'm talking about Gina, who is a leader in the community, a woman who took steps to lead herself and take her respect and the power within her to move forward. And she did. She did everything that if you were applying for a secretary job, you would do the same thing. This happens to be in a structure that's called the fire department, where she had, you know, she and several other women had to go through a lot of changes. Now, for women to go through changes, men don't see it as that. They feel that there's structure and that you should abide by it, but they don't see that there's a lot of changes and shifts that has to be made by both parties, correct?
That is correct. And, you know, we tend to promote ideas that are similar to ours. And if you think about that, you have a group of administrators that are all men. You know, they really, and I'm looking back now with a lot more compassion, mm-hmm. because I think, you know, they really honestly didn't see a problem. You know, they just weren't open to that being an issue or the ripple effect to some of their decisions on women, because they were so, for various reasons, some just, you know, I hate to say ignorance, but that's kind of what it was, just didn't realize what women's issues were on the fire department and how to appropriately support women in integrating into the fire service. And then part of it was discrimination. So, I mean, but when you're in a room with people all of like mind, you really have a hard time seeing a different opinion.
Yeah.
And part of what I talk about in the book, down the road as part of recovery for an organization, is to really get that you need to have a multicultural organizational chart, so you really are more open to those ideas. And can I tell a quick story on how that kind of looked one time?
Yeah.
We had a whole bunch of Congress people and senators come for a kind of see how our fire department runs day. And I ended up on the committee. And for the most part, what we were going to do was kind of set by a national standard. But we were, you know, doing the day-to-day activities, how we were going to, you know, personalize it for our department. And I remember standing up one time and saying, okay, well, we need to have hair bands for all the women, and we need to put in the brochure to tell them not to wear dresses or skirts. And The guys looked at me like I had four eyes and three horns, you know. It was like, they looked at me like, why would we do that? And I said, because they're coming to a PR event, they're probably going to dress nicely, and we need to tell them they're going to be in stinky turnout, you know. And you can't wear turnouts with a dress, you know, so... And it's not like we can easily redress them out on the field, you know. So they finally like, oh, okay. And then they I kept insisting we have to have the hair thing, and they're like, oh no. When I said, you know what, I'll just buy one and bring it for ponytails and stuff. I'll tell you, about every woman out there had long hair. Were just like, I was giving you, I gave out all my hair things. They're like, I didn't think about that. Thank God we knew to wear pants. And I mean, it was so silly, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, totally, they totally did not see how that might be an impact to the women, you know, of distinguished men and women. But the women, they were going to have there. They really did not see that. And I just think that some of these women would not have been able to participate in this great exercise in showcasing the fire service because they didn't have pants or their hair was constantly in their eyes. And so these women came out just totally jazzed about how much fun they were having and what a great experience it was. And I thought, you know, that's what women do. It's not always this big sweeping change, you know, and it wasn't really a big deal, I guess, in the bigger scheme. But you know what? It made a huge, big difference to the way that event fell out that day and the success of it. And that's why I say having different minorities, having different people, and your organizational chart from the top to the bottom even represented really gives you a much better viewpoint to work from, a much better platform to work from.
Yeah. And everything, like I, you know, I'm saying to our listeners, basically this is how you began to keep growing, and you definitely had to look at the balance within in the fire department, being a woman. You also later became a mother. You were pregnant on the department. But the interesting part of it was that how the men and women related to you when you became captain.
Yeah, they weren't happy about that. They did not lie. It's bad enough us women were all in the department. Now they're going to be our supervisors. I was the first woman captain promoted in the Clark County Fire Department. Right behind me in the next position was another woman. So we were the first two women captains on our department. And while that's a great honor and a great feat, it also is a great responsibility. The guys were not happy about that. And, and some of the threats were, literal threats. They would tell me, I can make you look good or I can make you look bad, and things aren't looking too good for you right now. Mm-hmm. And I would get to a fire as a captain, and part of my responsibility as a captain would be to tell my crew what we needed to do and where we needed to go. And I'd literally, be doing my incident command statement, telling, the incoming units what we're going to do. And I'd look around, and my crew was literally gone. They would abandon me. And I'd have to go track them down now. And here I'm trying to balance being in command and giving, other crews direction. And I can't even find my own crew, which is not how they're supposed to behave. It was really some blatant disregard for me as an officer. And even to the point I was set up by other officers to look bad. So it was definitely a learning curve and not a very pleasant one. And then I remember one time asking another captain, I just want a mentor. And he looked at me like I had, four eyes. He said, oh, why do you need a mentor? You're doing all, it was just, they couldn't even conceive mentoring me at that point. And it took a while before I finally found somebody who would mentor me, and it made a world of difference,
Yeah, because to my understanding is that, as you had said, that the next person in line for the promotion was also a woman, but there were some struggles there because then you felt alone. Something changed that you ended up, that there was a dissociation with, from one of the other women on the department, that you felt alone on this journey.
Yeah, the bad thing about discrimination, and my lawyer probably said it the best way, is discrimination is death by a thousand cuts. It's very rarely, and this is what makes it so hard to fight discrimination, is it rarely raises up to the legal realm. Most of the time, it's like I say in my book, if you're married, you don't have to say much. Your husband or your spouse is upset with you. They get a look in their eyes. They get a click in their tongue when they talk to you. They do something in a condescending way. And like I used to describe it as somebody can say, good morning, good morning. Well, good morning. Yeah. You go to your boss and you say, well, he told me good morning. Your boss is like, well, I don't see the problem in that. You know what I'm saying? It kind of ends up, it's just little thing that just eats away with you. And that's what makes it so difficult to fight discrimination. People would say, well, why don't you just complain about what they're doing? Well, it becomes a he said, she said, and it really doesn't go very far. And after a while, as a victim, you start really, if you say too much, you start feeling like Chicken Little after a while, and nobody really believes you. And that's what makes it so, I think, devastating for the victim. It's just the repeated little cuts that you get.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one big thing. However, in my case, it ended up being one big thing. It started out as kind of a twofold incident. And without going into a lot of details, just say that there was an incident at one of the stations where, as an acting captain, meaning I was about ready to get promoted and I was actually working at that rank, I was sleeping, because that's what we would do, in that captain's office, and there was me and another captain in there. Well, my boss calls up and says, you know, Gina, it just doesn't look right with you and a man sleeping in the office all by yourself. I want you to go back and sleep in the main dorm with all the engineers and firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I told him, you know, after some discussion, and there's more to this in the story, you know, I basically told him, well, you know, I'll do it, but I'd like to have your policy in writing, because I feel it's discriminatory and it definitely treats women different than men. And I think it undermines my authority. And so through a series of events, I ended up getting transferred over to a smaller station. Basically, they avoided me as a problem, which created a whole other issue. And so that basically, and honestly, that whole incident, and I'm totally bringing this down to less than a Reader's Digest version, that was really not the incident that bothered me. I mean, it was, but it ended up being what I won my lawsuit on. But what really bothered me, and you got to fast forward about 6 months later, was in between that time when I actually filed the lawsuit, started that paperwork or that process, because that's a process in itself, I got promoted to captain. The woman right after me got promoted to captain. And as a result, because it was kind of a big deal in the Las Vegas Valley, but it wasn't a very big deal, like we already talked about, on the fire department, the PR, our PR person, was asked by the media to do an interview with us. And so he contacted both her and I and asked if we would participate in an article for the Review Journal. And so we did that, and the article came out. And the article came out not quite like I said it. And it ended up with a huge, big backlash from the fire department, and I think it was just the way, I look back now, for them to really air a lot of their hostilities towards women supervisors. And the department allowed this email campaign, nasty campaign, to go on without any retribution to those writing it and participating in it. And it was really what brought me to my knees. The things that were done, the things that were said, the ostracization of me on the department was really mind-boggling. And that was probably where, like you said, the silver lining came from, but it was not very fun when I was in it. In fact, I was suicidal at one time. It was so bad. And so it was definitely a journey of climbing out of that and deciding that that wasn't who I wanted to be on the department and that I had some changing to do.
A lot of changes, and that's why I really want to encourage both men and women to see the, from this perspective of how the challenges for Gina that she had not only experienced and had to overcome, but also it is also about you know having the respect and to be treated you know, fairly. And like she had said that, you know, even when she got promoted, she still had to fight for the respect. With that said, I'll come back. I want to go ahead and do a real short commercial. And so if anyone's interested in purchasing her book, which is coming out in a couple of weeks, just go to www.firegal.net. So I'll be right back and we'll take a short commercial.
All right.
This is Insights for the Soul at blogtalkradio.com/foundationforinsight. This show is fully interactive during this live broadcast. If you have a question, you can call in at area code 347-838-8063. Again, that's area code 347-838-8063. Press the number 1 key on your phone and we will get to your question as soon as possible. You can also join us in the Blog Talk Radio chat room, where you can comment, discuss, and ask your question on the air if needed. At this time, we want to invite our listeners to generously favorite this show or any of our archived shows from our show page. For more information about this show, past shows, or up-and-coming shows, visit insightsforthesoul.com. One more time, our call-in number is 347-838-8063. And now, back to our show.
Welcome back, everyone. And this is Charmaine Lee live on Insights for the Soul. And we are back with our guest and very interesting person, situation, the things that she had to deal with as far as a woman and as a person. And it's about empowerment. It's about self-respect as you take this journey to be empowered and all the risks and all the fears and all the doubts that come with it. And so it's not just about, oh, let me go here so that I can be empowered. Gina Hall, forgive me about your middle name.
You can go. Delbach.
Okay, I did have it correct.
You were doing good.
Gina Gelbach Hall. You want to definitely look at her website, which is ifl.net, and purchase her book. And the name of her book, go ahead, Gina, you want to state your...
It's Fire Gal Rising from the Ashes. And I am hoping it will be out in the next 3 weeks, so by the 1st of July. And it's getting close. It's really close. I was hoping it'd be today, but nope, 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks.
I know. I get to that though. It's like you want to get it out, and then it's like, Yeah, but it'll be there, so you can again. They pre-order.
If they go through my website and I have a contact form on there. If you fill out the contact form and let me know, I can certainly have some out to you, and I can do, you know, a signed copy as soon as they're out, and we can take care of that. I'm not 100% set up for payment through there. That's one of the things I've been working on, and so we can work it all out through my webpage. So if you do want to fill out a contact form, I can help you there.
So for our listeners, again, Gina had to go through a lot of different things as far as growing and really taking on her own leadership and looking deep within inside herself, looking at the boundaries that she had to create in this journey, and especially when she became captain within the fire department, she still had to do the same thing. Correct? You still had to have your boundaries. You still had to work on your communication. And there was still negativity, right?
Yes, there was. And like I said, being one of the first women captains, there was no role model to follow. I tell people, I say, we train people how to treat us. I was a new officer, not even, I had the book smarts for it, but I didn't have the experience of being a captain. And so I'm learning on the job just like any new captain. Coupled with now I'm having to educate them on how to treat me. And I wasn't doing a very good job at the beginning of that. I wasn't. So I had to get much better at that. And one of the ways to do that was really once my lawsuit started going, kind of coming up, I had to really, over the time, learn how to become an advocate. And not just an advocate with a cause, but a successful advocate. You know, how I could get my ideas out there in a way they could actually hear. And I think a lot of this journey for me was learning how to become an effective advocate. And at the time, you know, I would just, how to say what you need to say without it being a messy job. And it was kind of messy at the beginning. So, you know, I had to learn how to do that. And in that, started taking leadership, sitting on committees, standing up for, and not being afraid to say it in a way, but say it in a way that they could actually hear it. So advocacy is a huge, big part of kind of getting into my empowerment.
And I like your quote, experience is a brutal teacher, but you learn, because you had to go through so much of the emotional pain. You know, it's just like anything, like if somebody was to, you know, hit you and brutally hit, physically hit you, it would be about the same. Do you agree with that? With the emotional pain?
I'm not sure I understand exactly what you're asking. Try again.
Well, and you're going through such emotional pain, and I'm just relating this to things that I went through within the structure of a police department. When you're going through these struggles to not only set boundaries, have clear communication, but yet the obstacles of everyone around you is being put forth, you know, being brought forth. And, I mean, obstacles, everything that they can think of. And there, with that, there was emotional pain, but it's almost as if you were you know, physically hurt as well, because every time there's an emotional abuse, it feels like you're tired, you're, you know, stressed, you know, your whole physical body becomes shut down. Did you feel that way?
Yes, yes, I did. And in fact, I talk about an incident in the book where I've been a captain for probably a couple of years, and I was sitting at my desk doing some paperwork, and I actually started having chest pains. And the chest pains came right after I'd been thinking about really my regrets on the department, you know, and I kind of described it as being a fish in a fishbowl, you know, where you see everybody out there, you know, the guys high-fiving each other, talking about their adventures with each other, and always feeling like the geeky sister, the one they don't want to take with them, you know, the third wheel, you know, or like the fish in the fishbowl, always looking at all the excitement but never being able to be a part of it. And that remorse, that regret, that feeling like an outsider literally was creating chest pains for me. And I really think the turning point for me was actually an injury beyond the chest pains, which ended up, thank God, being nothing at the time. I mean, no real injury. About 5 weeks after that, I was getting into our aerial ladder truck, and I was pulling myself up. I was all geared up with all the turnouts and everything, and I tore my rotator cuff. And at the time, they didn't really, you know, like me all that much. They didn't want me in the office, I think, although their official story was they didn't have any room for me on what we call light duty, which was an office assignment, because obviously with a torn rotator cuff, I couldn't be on the floor working fires and stuff like that. So I ended up being off for 5 months. And that 5 months is what I attribute to saving my life. I really do. It was a way for me to get out of the daily stress, the daily, you know, feelings I had there, and really start to recollect myself and get more grounded in who and what I was. And in that 5 months, I met a dear friend who actually started me on a very spiritual path where I learned about meditation. I did a lot of group work with a group that did a lot of, you know, like the correction goes in you would really teach you how to get in touch with your feelings and stuff. And it was in that process of starting that journey that I really do feel I started creating health in my life again and becoming more healthy as an individual and a person. So it was definitely sitting in my body, and it was definitely causing. I mean, I gained like 25 pounds. And it's been kind of interesting, a little side note here, talking about myself. I put out the book to the publisher to start working on this publishing thing about 2 months ago, and it was like the next day I started gaining weight. And I'm like, what is it? I'm not eating any different. What is this? And it took a little bit of self-reflection, but I kind of figured out that I'm nervous about this book coming out. I'm nervous that I had to go through a process to getting this to being published. It's kind of been a journey in the last 2 months because a lot of my main pain with the fire department was over an article that came out in the review journal. And here now I'm putting out a book onto Amazon.com. And I had to really look at, you know, that protection that weight tends to represent for me. And so I put on weight in the fire service, and I kind of took it off. Well, now I'm putting it all back on. But you know, it's very interesting. We don't always gain weight because we're eating too much or it's a force. It's a lot of times a mental thing. And so it's been interesting to be in more awareness this time to realize what I'm doing and not be as critical of myself for it. you know, I know that it'll as I relax into this process of actually getting the book published, the weight will start to go back down again. And I'm much more loving to myself than I was back in those days. Wow. You know, I was very critical of myself. So I've learned over the years to be much more loving and forgiving of myself, which was very difficult.
Yeah. Well, let me just say this, besides the fact that, you know, you're my friend, I truly do not see that. I see that, you know, for you out there who's listening, she's beautiful, truly a beautiful person. If you looked at her picture, you can see it on her book. She is just absolutely beautiful. So that's just my perspective. And because for anyone who had the guts to be, you know, to her, the guts and her willpower to really go within, because you had, the department was one way of you really truly looking at yourself and, you know, the empowerment that you had within yourself and how you did have to step up. But then also to go even deeper, because I that's the type of work I believe that a lot of people are missing, is to really go deeper to have any kind of change. Do you not agree?
I do. I talk a little bit about in the book, and I do a pre-101 course on the drama triangle, and it's three positions in the drama triangle, and I'm not going to really go into it here today, but you can play the role of the victim, the persecutor, or the rescuer. And so I talk about this because I really was in a victim mode, and I had, and what I talk about is the story I had created, and in this story, it was a great story. It really was, because I could tell you the story about how, you know, poor little Gina was getting discriminated by the Big Bad Wolf Fire Department, who was the persecutor, and then in engaging all my friends into being my rescuers. The problem is they would, you know, start giving me ideas on how to fix it, and I would start getting mad at them. You know, and it was like, it was not a healthy relationship. And so when I finally got involved with this group after hurting my shoulder, that really got me looking at how I was creating the drama triangle in my life and how I was perpetuating the victim stance in my own life, I really had to look at my own story. And it was even hard to break out of my story in some of the group work I did, because people are like, no, tell me more. So I'm like, no, I can't tell that story anymore. It's not healthy, you know. But it was an interesting tale. And so I really had to get very vulnerable, very real, and practice some intimacy. And one of the ways you can say intimacy is into me, I see. And I think some of the hardest work I had to do was to take off all those layers of BS, belief systems and BS that I had on myself, that I was where I was believing the story about, you know, me. And it was a very big challenge to do that, because when you start taking off, you know, other people being responsible for your problems and start really owning them, there's a moment where you start going, oh my God, I don't know if I want to do this. No, this is not good. And the problem with any emotional work and any growth work is you don't get to unlearn it. It's a one-way street. It's like, have you ever had a porcupine quill? If you go one way, it's smooth like a needle, and then you go back way and it's like jabbing you like 1,000 needles. It's like that. You know, so you're like going one way. You don't get to back up on personal growth stuff. Once you know that you're in a victim story, you know about the drama triangle, you know you're in a story, you know all this stuff, you cannot really go back and say, well, that's okay with me to be that anymore. You really have to start living that life. And I'll tell you, there are many days I wish I hadn't done this work. I would rather blame it on somebody else. Please, you take it. It's all your fault.
No, it's me. Yes. And behind that, though, I have to say that in doing so, in taking responsibility for yourself, a lot of you out there have to realize that it did have to, it did take courage and choices. Is that not true, Jean?
That is very true. I mean, you know, I tell, and I say in the book, I said, making a choice to sue the department. I sued them for a harassment and discrimination, a Title VII issue for systemic discrimination, meaning that it was not only happening to me, but it was happening to all the other women out there, too. That was actually probably the easier decision to make. You know, I mean, there's a prescribed path that you do when you hire a lawyer. You go through the whole process. It's a pretty well lined out path. What I didn't realize is the impact that would have on my life. And I like to put it in perspective of my family. When I filed my lawsuit in 1996, my oldest son was starting kindergarten. When I finished this process in 2008. I got to figure out what that was. 12 years later, my son was graduating from high school. So his whole time at home, he never got mom without this in the back of my head, you know. And I used to equate it to like a, for those of you old enough like me, you remember at midnight the TV would go off and you'd have a national anthem and then it would get the static and it'd be like. You know, and you could fall asleep to it. It was like background noise. But it only took a little, like just a little minor shift of your thoughts, and you would hear that again. That was what the case was. There were times that I honestly, you know, would go about my life and forget it because there would be long times when we really wouldn't be doing anything with it, waiting for whatever. And then there were times that it was up front and center, and it was loud and blaring in my ear, like, you know, somebody had the volume up to max. And so, but during that, I would go a little crazy, you know, when the case would start revving up. But my point was, it affected my whole life. You know, I started, you know, like I had an incident with my mom who told, you know, at one time, about middle of the way through the lawsuit, we were thinking that we might go to trial, and I had to come up with the expenses for depositions and professional or, you know, expert witnesses and stuff like that out of my pocket. And so I approached my mom to see if she'd be willing to support me financially through that part of it. And she was hit and she goes, well, will you win? And I was so devastated by that. I thought, well, why would I do this if I didn't think I'd win? Mm-hmm. And it really created a rift between my mom and I and my dad, because I was like, if you're not on my bus, it's even without you. If you don't believe that I can win and I can make it through this, you're not with me. And and I rarely talked about the case with them for the rest of the time. And it was kind of like that. Or I would get somebody that was really open and nice and, you know, like, oh, tell me more. And I would just vomit everything out on them because I had so much that I was holding in on this emotional backpack I was carrying that I would, like, overwhelm them. And so I was really pretty lonely through that whole time because I was either burning out the people that were nice to me or I was mad at the people who weren't supporting me like I thought they should. So it really had a adverse impact on my personal life in that sense. And at the time when I was married, my husband, who was also a firefighter, he would, you know, get sick of hearing me talk about it because he was the only one that couldn't run away. and I get mad at him when he wasn't as indignant as I was about something that happened. And, you know, it really did have a big impact on my life for a long time.
Wow. Yes, and it affected, like you said, affected the relationship you had with your parents and as well. And what people don't understand when we're dealing with behaviors, we really don't know what type of reaction we would get from who we believe is our.
Are you there? Yeah. Okay. I can hear you.
Okay. Good. And uh-oh, John. But during this time, mm-hmm. as I was saying, is that when you're dealing with all these different behaviors, you see a reflection of your own behavior because you tend to to feel the hurt or the pain, and not the support or you know, the belief in you yourself of your own word. There was a lot of recovery that you had to go through from that process, right?
Yes, yes. And I think the biggest part was, you know, and like I said, joining that group really helped, is one of the processes we had, the facilitator took us through, was a rage process. And, you know, I was like, oh, I don't have any rage. I don't have any rage. Well, finally, when I hit rage, I screamed so loud, so hard. They actually hold you down. It's a hold-down rage, which sounds terrible maybe to the outside person, but it's a wonderful thing because, you know, you can't hurt anybody. You can't hurt yourself. It's all in a controlled atmosphere. And it was the most cathartic thing I did. And I actually remember when I'm doing this that, if you remember, like on The Mummy, when all those gnat or fly things fly out of his mouth,
yeah,
you know, I literally felt that coming out of my mouth, you know, like that thing of just purging all of that out of there. And I literally had black and blue eyes the next day from it. But it was probably one of the most cathartic things, because one of the things I talk about is emotions, an emotional backpack. And I think what had happened over time was, I think when you're doing pretty good in your life and things are going, you know, normal for you, you throw an emotional backpack, you get some emotion, and you throw that rock in your backpack. And when you're healthy, there's kind of a flow. The rocks kind of fall out the bottom, and the backpack maintains a manageable weight. It may get heavy, but, you know, there's a flow to it. What happened with me is those 1,000 cuts just kind of overwhelmed my whole system. And, you know, then with the lawsuit and all that, I was throwing freaking boulders in that backpack, you know, and it was just weighing me down. And there was really no effective way. I mean, I really couldn't effectively on my own manage that. It was really, it was, like I said, it was creating chest pains in me, you know, and really affecting my quality of life. And so part of that rage was in some ways emptying some of the boulders out of that backpack. And as that weight started kind of coming off and I could start seeing daylight, then it was like, oh, okay, now I can start, you know, making some different choices that are more empowering to me, more supportive of me, more in line with what I want in my life. Because what I think when you're scared, I kind of equate it to like those horse things, you know, where they put them around their eyes so they can't see the distractions on the side. I think when we get into fear, those things are so narrow on our eyes, we really can't see all the options out there. And it isn't until we start really dealing with that fear and kind of opening ourselves out, taking some of that burden off ourselves, however you may do that, the blinders start opening up and what you start seeing is more opportunities. And like the porcupine, you know, nobody wants to hug a porcupine. It's very painful. So what would happen was, I was such a porcupine at the beginning because I had been so, you know, hurt. I had all these defense mechanisms up. You know, all the foils were out. And so when somebody did tell me something that would have been helpful for me, I fought with them. I fought with them. And so after a while, they go, well, good, I'm not helping her. You know, so as I started letting those foils fall off, I could actually start hearing some of the good advice without the filter of they're trying to hurt me. And so that was really a big change for me when I started letting people actually into my life, being more vulnerable that way. And not seeing, like I describe it as a radar screen. You know how when you really want this new car, I love the Lexus convertible. One of these days I'm getting a Lexus convertible. Saw one today. It's like I see them all over the place. I know they're not all over the place. I just, my awareness of them is up.
Yeah.
And so just like that car is an awareness for me, so can discrimination, or like I say, rainbows. You know, we can choose what we see on our radar screen. I really had to get to the point where I wasn't seeing discrimination all the time on my radar screen. You know, where I had to take it off of there and say, wait a minute, you know, kind of give myself a space of, okay, I'm sure it's not happening every place. You know, let me get some perspective on this. And as I started bringing those blinders back, getting some more perspective and not putting everything that I thought might be discrimination up on my radar screen, I could start relaxing and becoming a more effective advocate,
I just started articulating what I needed and wanted in an effective way that they could actually hear it, and I could, you know, say it without being in like, I need it. You know, it's more like, here, this is what I need to support. And so I became, as I calmed down, as I let that out, as I took some of those boulders out, I was able to really start working the system in a way that was a win-win for all of us.
Nice. And so I want to go into a short little break, but everybody, this is the time to go to your site because you are also a coach. So you know you can assist other people who are going through similarities, whether it's with their jobs or with their any type of relationship that I can see from this perspective. I can see that it can help with any type of relationship where they feel that they're in a man's environment that's dominant, and yet they can really find ways to empower themselves by your experience coming from a different perspective. And
Uh-oh, I can't hear you again.
Happened. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay. All right. So, Spirit, I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah. We need a commercial break.
So we're going into a commercial break, and then we'll get some of your information, and we'll go into some other questions when we get back. All right, go ahead.
This is Insights for the Soul at blogtalkradio.com/foundationforinsight. This show is fully interactive during this live broadcast. If you have a question, you can call in at area code 347-838-8063. Again, that's area code 347-838-8063. Press the number 1 key on your phone, and we will get to your question as soon as possible. You can also join us in the Blog Talk Radio chat room, where you can comment, discuss, and ask your question on the air if needed. At this time, we want to invite our listeners to generously favorite this show or any of our archived shows from our show page. For more information about this show, past shows, or up-and-coming shows, visit insightsforthesoul.com. One more time, our call-in number is 347-838-8063. And now, back to our show.
Welcome back to Charmaine Lee Live with Insights for the Soul. And our guest is Gina Gelbach Hall. And we've been talking about, about a book that's going to be coming out soon. And you can get that on her website, which is firegal.net. And it's about empowerment and much more, because she had come from being a victim and then to getting empowered herself and then leading. And as I said before, some of you probably couldn't hear, and maybe you did, we don't know what's going on with Blog Talk Radio. It can be translated into your personal lives if you feel that you're dominated and there's no boundaries or there's no communication. She is also a coach that can assist you in not only being inspired, because every time I'm around Gina, I feel inspired just by her way of being, because she has come from a place that I can definitely relate with her in a environment where it's male dominant. But it isn't just about that. I believe, Gina, that you're wanting to communicate to everyone that that they too can empower themselves in any type of situation. Is that not right?
That is absolutely true. And you know, it doesn't even have to be like a male female thing. I really honestly, and I say it over and over in the book, that having what happened to me wasn't good for the organization in general. You know, it really isn't good for your place in employment. Even if it isn't happening to you, it's happening to somebody else. It still has a ripple effect into the office environment, into the station environment, into the community environment. And it's amazing to me, you know, because it is a little bit on my radar, discrimination. it's amazing to me to see how one person does have a negative, their negative attacks, their negative thoughts, their negative performance has a ripple effect on really how your whole team or organization can run. And I really want to people to get, men and women both, that sitting around and not doing anything about it, just being thankful it's not happening to you, really is short-sighted. It really is happening to everybody. It has a ripple effect that affects everybody in the organization. And it is everybody's responsibility, I think, to stand up and say something and to not allow it to keep happening. Because it really, it's a virus that just permeates in a really negative way. And sometimes in ways you don't even realize until it's too late.
Well, it's also, to me, I feel that's also a message for the children today that are going through the bullying process in the schools.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's the same relationship. There's somebody who is always, we call it the bully. And, overpowering, controlling, taking one's, self-worth, if not identity. And so this message in your book is truly about empowerment for everyone.
It is. And, I hope when people look at it, they don't think it's just about men and women. It really is about, I think it's as valuable for men to read, is really just giving them a different perspective. Because remember, like I said earlier, when they're sitting in a group of all men making decisions, it's not that they don't want to be good, quote unquote, good all the time. It's sometimes they just aren't aware.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hoping this book will be like, wait a minute, maybe there's some things we need to consider. Maybe we need to dig a little deeper. Maybe we need to do a little more research into this, to make sure that impact is truly an impact that's empowering for all, not just, what we think. Are we really in reality on this?
Yeah.
Because sometimes you get as an organization, because I rose up in the organization, I was more involved in an administrative level, you really do get on this track, and it's hard to, really take in consideration the impact. And I was kind of in a unique position as a battalion chief where I didn't write policy, but I had to administer policy. It's kind of like truly right in the middle of the whole process. And so a lot of times, I would be trying to tell management, this is kind of really not going to work like you think, because I have to manage it down here and I know what the problems are going to be. And they're going, no, we want to do it this way. They get like really the blinders to get really tight on their eyes. And of course, we would have to do it like you said. We were just pawns in this. And, of course, there would then be grievances and a whole process. And it was like if we could get everybody on the same page kind of really talking, we would have avoided a lot of those problems.
Right. A win-win instead of win-lose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yes.
And so for – I know you're getting ready also, besides with the book, you're putting together your workshop. Can you explain to them what – Empower, your acronym stands for, and a little bit of a description of your workshop?
Yes, it will. It's called Empower Yourself and Ignite the Flame. And Empower, what I've kind of worked out, and it's still about half written. I'm hoping in the next month to have it written and kind of start getting it out there. But E, everything begins with you. And we kind of talked about that, where you're the only common denominator in your life. And of course, I talk about all these in a whole day seminar. The M is master your feelings. And I'm talking about primarily about the choices you're going to make and taking responsibility for those choices, and some about the radar and field thinking that we have. P is prioritize your desires. And that's identifying the emotions you need to return back into love and empowerment in your life. And see how fear is getting in the way of seeing the truth. O is organizing your life. And I talk about clutter, emotional, physical clutter, and its cost to you, and how you might go about some steps to clear that up and start seeking your truth without all the clutter in the way. The W is win all the time. We're going to talk about the silver lining. If you always know whatever's happening, there's going to be a win at the end. It kind of takes a little bit of the fear off it and gets you through to the other side a little faster. I'm also going to talk about gateway behavior. We haven't talked about it here, but that's a whole interesting concept for those of you who get to my seminar. E, expand your mind. And sometimes when all we have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So we want to try to look at, you know, your personal growth and how life is always evolving. Kind of that E equals MC squared. And then R, the last, is realize your dreams. And miracles really begin with baby steps. They, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, I'm waiting for the, you know, the choir of heavenly angels to sing, and then I'll go do what I'm supposed to do. And they forget that really miracles start when you first start taking action. And talk about the benefit of visualizing what you want. That ended up kind of being a thing that I had to do. I had to visualize me in a better future. And then dreams follow you. So use your consciousness wisely. And so that's kind of the synopsis of what we'll do in the one-day seminar.
Oh, that's beautiful. And so anyone out there, not only her, look up, go to her website and look at her workshop, but also the services that she provides. Especially her book, Fire Gal, Rising from the Ashes. This is something that I believe it should be in the hands of many people just when they're looking at, you know, forming their own boundaries, because throughout the book, it is about how you had to take a look at forming those boundaries and then standing in your own truth within those boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think we have enough time to talk about all my stories. I do want to say one other way you can get a hold of me is on Facebook. Fire Gal Rising from the Ashes is my page on Facebook. So you can also friend me there and start letting you know when the book's coming out or events and stuff like that too. So if you're a Facebook user, you can get me there.
And I'm stressing this because I'm about empowerment, and some of the things that Gina does is always standing within her power. There's not a time that I feel that that she is not in partnership with me. I always feel as I can see a reflection and the strength within her. It brings out the strength within me. So if you haven't experienced her, you know, go to her seminar or read her book just to find out more about Gina. Here's one of the things that that brings this forth is something that Martin Luther King has said. Faith is taking the first step, even when you don't see the whole staircase. And that's exactly what you did, Gina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had to visualize a future that wasn't quite here yet. Yeah. I do. Also, one of the other quotes I use from here, let me get to it real quick, is Frederick Douglass. He's actually probably one of the, his words really kind of, at the time I didn't realize it, but as I wrote the book, really realized kind of the path I was on. And I love what he embodies, three keys for success in life. Believe in yourself, take advantage of every opportunity, and use the power of spoken and written language to affect positive change for yourself and society. I just love that.
I really do like these different statements and empowerment. And even though that I believe that there, that we are all on the same level as far as, you know, reflections of one another, and we know that because of the many things that work that we have done, Gina. I look at it as we grow, everyone grows, and it makes the entire planet, you know, on a one-to-one, unity and a lot more peace. And people who are struggling right now, you know, with the economy, having to work in different environments and workplaces that they're not familiar with, and they have to struggle to to get into synchronicity with the company or organization or wherever. Some have had to give up their homes and find ways to work with their landlords or people that they need to have their home and figure it all out. And I believe this is part of what it is in your book, even though it's, through your struggles within, the fire department. So it really gives a deep message about that this is applicable to anyone out there, just taking when you take the first step, that there is hope. And I believe that's what you were also trying to say for those out there.
I totally am, and I say it really strongly towards the end of the book. We are all so worth it, and as I did a lot of group healing work, I think the most amazing thing I found through all this and kind of gave me the courage to keep taking those next steps and keep taking those next steps was that as I heard more and more personal stories and people doing, these cathartic purgings of what was hurting them and what was keeping them back and their fears, how much we were all alike, that I wasn't that unique. And as I found these and heard these stories, I found out that we are all kind of hurting about the same stuff. We may color it with the fire department, may color it with the police department, may color it with family, childhood abuse. We all almost, and I'm being a little metaphoric here, we almost have the same core issues of just wanting to belong, wanting to be loved, and how those things get in the way of being that. And it was so beautiful to see these people go through these transformations as they went to a higher vista in their life and got a better perspective and were able to let go of some of those hurts and really see them literally physically change in front of me as they came to those realizations. And my life is so much better as a result of the work I did. I'm so much happier and better to deal with the next things that come along. It really is beautiful as you start really seeing that we are more alike than we are different. It's really beautiful.
Yes, it is. And the other part of it, I know some people will probably want to know, is that even though that you're, you retired as a battalion chief, you have in your bio, you still had to go through all these changes and being able to transition from being a victim to a strong woman. And you also, that anyone can do this. I mean, you did that and you're still going through the process, but still, like you said, you're happier, you're stronger. You can stand with conviction, but the message is that they need to be, that anyone can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, anybody can. And really what it takes, and I think this is where the first step is realizing that where you are right now isn't where you want to be. And I think when you finally really say, I'm going to take that on, I really feel in my heart there's something better out there. And you take that courage, that first step, it takes a lot of courage sometimes. When you start taking that step, it's amazing how the universe just starts unfolding in front of you. There's a saying, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And that truly was. I mean, I had been off like 3 or 4 days with that shoulder injury. And lo and behold, a gal that had cut my hair and had this 5-minute conversation while she was cutting my hair 2 months earlier that just put a little seed. Well, wouldn't you know it, 5 days later, she's walking down in the gym that I'm at, and we see each other, and she just happened to have 2 hours to do coffee. And that conversation started a whole nother world for me. And I really, as a student, I was ready. And sure enough, that teacher appeared. And that's really that faith that comes in, that when you're ready to really take on your life and really ready to change it, people are there to help. People are there to support you, and it's available. you know, that the teachers will appear.
Yes, I truly believe that. When, like you said, when, you know, everything, when you're ready, the teacher does appear. Do you believe that it isn't just one time? Sometimes it occurs several times, just depending on where you are in your life.
Yeah, I believe I call it messages, problems, or crisis. If you don't get the messages in your life, guess what? You'll get some problems in your life. And if you don't get those problems, guess what? You get a crisis. Either way, you're going to get it. I do think, you know, there are, I won't say, go as far as to say predestination in our lives, but I do think, and this is getting a little, you know, woo-woo out there, but I do think some of us do come in with all of us come in with a greater purpose. Kind of like, if everything goes well, this could be our grand plan. You know, that potential's out there. And I do think we get messages that kind of guide us in that direction. And like I said, you know, there were a few things in my life, always starting in second grade, where things didn't work out for me, and they ended up being like a message or a crisis or a problem or a crisis. And those kind of kept me on a path that I think eventually led me to right here talking to you, you know, writing a book, you know. And I think in some ways I was a little bit guided spiritually to where I am now, you know, based on, and you'll see some of those things in the book. I don't say it quite that way, but, you know, I did get some messages that I ignored, and I got some problems. And then, you know, I actually got a crisis that I was lucky nobody got hurt on. That really ended up changing the way I did my life and my management of a crew, a fire crew, and kind of really solidified me becoming a leader instead of a follower. So, yeah, I do think we get these opportunities to really make some good choices.
Yes. And sometimes for our listeners, sometimes we don't see that the boundaries that we have not set, that it not only can happen from men, but also from women. Women can also overstep the boundaries.
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes that even hurt more in my case, because I was, I didn't expect it from them. I knew they were going through the same thing. And, you know, you kind of hope that they will be supportive of you. And honestly, as I look back now, I think they were in just as much fear and wanting to protect their own reputations and kind of get out of being lumped with me, that sometimes they ended up being meaner than some of the guys. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really, I think as women, we really need to look at each other and really get that we need to support each other. And sometimes that support's going to be keeping our mouth shut, you know, at times, you know. And sometimes it's going to be flat out saying, no, that wasn't right, and standing by a woman that's having an issue. Because I can tell you, if it's happening to her, it's happening to more than just one person. You know, and that virus that person is doing, you know, that negative thing they're doing to an employee, it affects everybody. It's just not between them, those two. It affects everybody because everybody gets icky by it. And that it's like a virus that permeates the whole. And then what happens is it's a snowball effect, which I call gateway behavior, and I don't have enough time to get into it here. But, you know, that gateway opens to a whole bunch of a hornet's nest. And so we really do need to realize we need to support other women. We need to support men in supporting women, you know. Yeah. And we need to really step back and realize there's two sides to every story, and the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Exactly. There is two sides to the story. And so just to my friends on the chat room I'm reading, is that he said true self-empowerment comes from consciously expanding and integrating all our soul and beingness with source and all of creation through the divinity within all of us, source consciousness. So you are speaking of, you know, being conscious and aware and standing in your own power. And so, again, Can you believe it? We're at the end of the show.
Oh, <Aww. laughs> you know, I know. It was very fun. Thank you.
And so can you go ahead and state where everyone could get a hold of you, purchase your book? I know it's coming out in 2 weeks, but a way to get a hold of you. Can you go ahead and reiterate that information again?
I can. It's my name is Gina Gelbach-Hall. And you can get a hold of me. Probably the easiest way is through firegal.net. That's my webpage, and I have a contact form on there that you can, you know, send me your information, and I can, you know, assist you through there. My seminar, I'm in the process of writing it right now. I'm hoping in the next 2 to 3 months to have the first one out. So I'll be contacting people through the webpage and also through my Facebook page, which is under Fire Gal Rising from the Ashes, which is the name of the book. The book will be available at Amazon.com. Let's keep our fingers crossed. In 2 weeks, we'll have it. And then about another 6 weeks after it's out, it'll also be a Kindle version for those of you with iPads and iPhones and the technology router Kindle. So, yes, I'm very excited about it. I'm very excited to, you know, be starting this new chapter in my life, and really excited, Charmaine, to have you as a person who's lifting women up and really being supportive of the work, and I appreciate it so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Of course, it's like you said, it's like all of us standing, you know, side by side and standing with conviction of who we are, to, you know, and to empower ourselves, to empower others, and I see that within you, and it always, you know, promotes within myself to look deeper and say, get going, let's keep going.
Mm-hmm. So, it's amazing when we all work together, the synergy we can create, and how much better we go with positive reinforcement versus negative reinforcement.
Exactly. And like I said earlier, I believe this is great information for our, you know, preteens and our teens who are struggling with many different things, that, you know, with identity, being able to own their own truth, also to fend off any type of control or bullying. I really, truly believe that there's a greater message in your book. And so everyone, take a look at your...
At your
are you there?
I hope so.
Yeah.
It's been 3 years in the making. I'm ready to start, you know, selling it versus talking about it.
Yeah. And, you know,
get it out there.
It's beautiful. I just love the way it captures the feeling of it when I look at your book. And you know, I challenge everybody, take a look at it. From a different perspective. It is about empowerment. It is about your mind, body, and spirit. It is all that. It encompasses all of it. And the truth be known is through what experience she had within the fire department, and it has nothing to do with altitude within the department that got her to where she is. It had to do with her finding that, to find out that she was the common denominator, and she had to find her her own truth to empower herself. So when we look at this and you read her book, it's so beautifully said, because when we talk about organizations or we talk about those who are in control, we at first want to be respectful, but then when we become the target or you know, picked on or whatever it is that you may call it, sometimes we lose our identity, we will get lost, and some people have even shut down their voice and have become almost invisible and always being silent, to where their physical bodies, you know, shut down, or their spiritual aspects of them, you know, isn't even in tune anymore. So take time to read her book. Go to her, you know, Facebook, Fire Gal, right? It's Fire Gal.
Fire Gal Rising from the Ashes.
Yes.
That's the whole title, yes.
This is the time to look at this and see that. And is there? And so that's the best way for people to get a hold of you, right, Gina?
Those two, Facebook and the webpage. I'm kind of just now starting the social media part of it. I'm sure in the next week or two I'll have a Twitter account up and stuff. But right now, probably the best place to get updated information is on firegal.net.
Wonderful.
Or the Facebook page. They'll be congruent with each other.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. And so for our audience, in to leaving a thought, and I really thank you again, Gina, for being on the show for Insights of the Soul. You know, what an honor. And I cannot wait until I have you back on to see exactly what is happening with everything. It's so definitely, like, you know, 6 months down or so, just, you know, feel free to get a hold of me again so you can be on my show.
I would love it. Thank you so much for honoring me with this. And I really appreciate your work and all you do. So thank you very much. You and John. So thank you both.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. So I'm going to leave everyone out there for you a thought. Be what you are. This is the first step toward becoming better than you are, by Julius Charles Hare. So you have been listening to me, Charmaine Lee, and we are live with Insights for the Soul. Live fully, heal thoroughly, and we'll see you next